Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to another Rahalastapa. This one comes from the Wolverhampton Literature Festival. Very exciting. I hope you'll enjoy it. I've grown up. It's a very grown-up show. Look, we're doing loads more Rahalastapas in 2019 at the Leicester Square Theatre on February the 18th, James Acaster and London Hughes. February the 25th, Joel Dommett and Susie Ruffle. March the 4th, Les Dennis, come on, and Matt Ford. March the 11th, Rosie Jones and Matt Lucas from off of Little Britain, come on. March the 18th, Sindhu V and To Be Announced. March the 25th, no guests announced yet, but I'm heading for big names for all these TBAs, so it's worth booking ahead. And April the 1st, no such thing as a fish, and Professor Alice Roberts. We're going to end classy, I can tell you that's going to be lots of facts. Also, I'm at Bath on February the 15th at the Comedia with my guests Kerry Howard and To Be Announced. And I'm also coming to Brighton on the 3rd of April. There's two shows now, one at 6.30, one at 8.30. The 8.30 one is sold out. The 6.30 one still has some tickets as I record this. As I am saying this, there is no guarantee there are still some now. Why not come and see us live? Go to richherring.com/gigs and there might be even more announced by now. Let's sit back, relax and enjoy Richard Herring's Lustapa, as it will now be known. Goodbye. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Bilston Town Hall. Please welcome a man who doesn't understand why he's in Bilston Town Hall. It's Richard Herring! Oh yeah, I used to be on the telly. What's happened? Hello! Hello, Bilston! Bilston? I've always dreamed of playing here. They say you play Bilston Town Hall twice in your career, but they're wrong. You only play it once. I'm never coming back. So, not even on the way down. I don't think this. Anyway, welcome to Richard Herring's. Hold on, it's changed because we're somewhere else. I want to get it right. Richard Herring's. I have to read. This is pathetic. Lovely, super, terrific podcast. Though I was hanging around at Bilston Craft Gallery earlier today. It's the largest dedicated craft venue in the West Midlands. I don't know if you know that. I was with Liam from One Direction. He's hanging around. He's from Wolverhampton. He calls it Rehullastop. I don't know if that's... Thank you. Yeah, that is... It's lovely to be here at the Wolverhampton Literature Festival. Always love coming to Wolverhampton. Unless this is quite unusual. There's a full venue in Wolverhampton. I don't quite know what to do with myself. My dream is to play the Civic Hall, the big one. This would be about an eighth of the big room in the, if only it were open. It's Wolverhampton. It gets a bad press, I have to say. It was voted the fifth worst city on the planet. And that's at least on the planet. That's not all planets. That's just this planet. It's probably, if you include all the planets, it's probably not even in the top 10. So don't worry about that. That was in 2009, so things have changed. Last year, it was voted the second worst city in the United Kingdom. Not even the worst. That at least would be something. And recently, the most miserable place in Britain. It's twinned with Subotica in Serbia, which is Subrotica. Klagenfurt in Austria. Klagenfurt is actually Austrian for fanny fart. I don't know if you know that. And Ulaanbaatar, this must be a joke, right? This is from Wikipedia. Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia. Is also Mongolian for fanny fart. So that's something to watch out for. But it gets a bad press, Wolverhampton. But I like Wolverhampton and Bilston. I think it's still the same place. Trying to work that out. Wolverhampton, they can't knock you. You had the first automatic traffic lights in the United Kingdom. That's it. But that's still something. The automatic ones. And it was recently voted the third best city to raise your child in by moneysupermarket.com. So it's not all bad news, is it? And it's best to raise them in a hellhole. That is apparently the message of those different surveys. Then they at least appreciate leaving. That's what I think we might find out with our guest today. So, and the big news in the Express and Star today, this is the 1st of February, Jimmy Carr's dad in row with Dudley Council over roundabout advertising. That's what the people of Wolverhampton are. He's annoyed they're taking down his adverts. He wants to leave them up. Going well, isn't it, for Wolverhampton? So that is... his dad is Jimmy Carr's dad. He might be called Jim Carr. No, he can't be. It was something like that, John. He runs a business that puts the adverts on the roundabouts in Dudley. You must have seen them. They've been there for a while. They're a bit run down. The contract has expired. I'm surprised I have to tell you the story. He wants to leave them open, hoping he'll win the tender again, but the Dudley Council are saying that legally they have to come down, but also they've come down because they're looking a bit worn, you know. But Jimmy Carr's dad is saying you leave them up for free, but, you know, but no. That's what's happening here. Right, let's crack on, I think. We've had some fun. My guest tonight, we're just one guest tonight, as always, of course. He's probably best known for being the news bunny on live TV. Hopefully he's come in the costume. I don't know whether he's dressed up. Will you please welcome Wolverhampton local boy, Sathnam Sangera, ladies and gentlemen. Well, thank you very much. Sit down. Oh, pick up a mic. You've got to kind of hold it by your face. Do it yourself.
I see you went for the cheap laughs about Wolverhampton.
I'm not at all. I love Wolverhampton.
Well, you didn't mention we have battered chips.
I didn't mention that. No, you did promise me to. You promised you'd bring me some battered chips.
I know they don't. It's like oysters. You've got to eat them fresh from the sea. I didn't. I thought they'd go off. Yeah. But you know, we batter the fish and then we batter the chips. That's tempura nice. Chips.
It sounds delightful. I'm on a diet at the moment, so I might have only been able to nibble if you had brought one. What do you remember about being the news bunny on live TV?
Oh, God. You know, I wish you could edit your Wikipedia entry.
Yeah.
Because...
Is it not true?
Well, I was a news bunny on live TV.
And also, so you just wish you could edit because it's embarrassing.
Yes, and also okay. I was a runner on Topless Darts.
Yes, well, I was going to wonder whether you... It went...
Yeah. The thing is, if you're growing up in Wolverhampton, you don't get many opportunities to work in the media. And live TV would basically have me.
Yeah.
So I went. And the thing about Topless Darts was my job was to... Because the models weren't very good at darts... my job was to throw the dart into the dartboard.
Oh, really?
And in an act of fakery, they would pretend the model had,
wow.
had thrown it, yeah.
This is a massive exclusive straight away. Topless darts, they were just topless. That's just topless women. That's no good. I thought they were good at darts. I thought they were average at darts, to be honest.
I'm sorry to dispel that.
Yeah.
And being a news bunny was much more complicated than you think because, as you know, working in TV...
Yes.
Oh, well, you have to be...
It's been a while, but yeah.
It's been a while.
I can think back.
Sorry to raise that painful
right.
memory. You have to be politically neutral. So as the bunny, you were dressed up in a bunny suit, and the news editor was reading out the headlines. So say, for example, you know, a Labour government had just come into power.
Yeah.
If you were too enthusiastic, you could get in trouble with the regulators. Generally, you could. You had to be politically... It was much more complicated and intelligent... than you would suspect. I think my low point on live TV was they had this show on 11:30 called The Sex Show.
Right. It was a classy channel, wasn't it?
Very classy, yeah. where a married couple sometimes would come on and talk about their sex lives.
Okay, that's better than I thought it was going to be.
And one day, the producer came up to me and said, Satnam, you know, the guys dropped out. You know, he's got problems with erectile dysfunction.
Yeah.
Would you mind just pretending to be that guy?
Yeah.
That's where I drew the line.
Was it?
Yeah.
Because you're sexually aroused by talking about erectile dysfunction and that way it would just been, that guy hasn't got, look at him. It's like a tentpole down there. I think I was on the first day of live TV. I believe, I might have confused this. It started off and it wasn't quite as... tabloid as it became, I think. Is that
yeah,
fair
I think
to
they
say?
Had they had more money at the beginning.
Yeah, so I think on the first, we didn't get paid. Me and Stu went on to publicise whatever tour we were doing at that time. So it was mid-90s. It must have been mid to late 90s, was that right?
Yeah.
And Richard E. Grant was on, the future Oscar nominee.
Wow.
Yeah, it was very exciting. Don't remember anything else about it. But
I think Jerry Halliwell also started on live TV.
She?
It was like a really shit Footlights, basically. But I went from there to the FT.
Well, that's quite a leap. Did they make you dress up as a bunny at the FT? Just have to go, oh, the better markets are down. And it's amazing that TV would have an ethnic person on in the 1990s and make them dress up in a fucking bunny outfit. That is, we have got one, but we've hidden him away. But that's an interesting start to your career. So so you have been a journalist, and then you... well, the book The Boy with the Top Knot is obviously what you're really best known for, and so that sort of tells the story of your progression from Wolverhampton. I mean, it's interesting to read about like someone who's grown up in such a different background. I still can't imagine having to live in Wolverhampton, though. So even with that, it's very well described.
Look, I feel like we need to address this Wolverhampton issue.
Yeah.
I've got a whole theory about why Wolverhampton always comes in surveys. Mm. I think it's one of those places that people haven't actually visited. Combined,
yes, I've visited it, and it's a shithole. Yeah, sorry.
Secondly, it's a kind of place people travel through on the train.
Yeah.
And it is admittedly a terrible view from the train.
From the train. Or just driving through, or standing.
I generally can't believe you could say that. You've been to Doncaster, right?
I tell you, the problem really that I can't really mock you too much because my family come from Middlesbrough, which I don't think is a city. Otherwise, it would be the worst city in the world, in the universe. So I can't really. We dreamt of moving to Wolverhampton.
Exactly. Also, I think there's something intrinsically funny about the accent, and also the word Wolverhampton. It just sounds funny. It's a good way to end a gag, isn't it, Wolverhampton?
It is. Well, it's weird because most of the Hamptons are quite posh, aren't they? But then Wolverhampton. It's the least posh Hampton there is. What I like about Wolverhampton is the people of Wolverhampton and the fact you can tell them to their face they live in a shithole and they laugh, even though they're defending it. And the worst places you go to, the places where it's quite bad, and you go, this is quite bad, and they go, no, it isn't, it's great.
I know exactly the place you're thinking of, because I dated someone from this place. It's Newcastle, isn't it?
Newcastle's nice now, though, man. Newcastle's gone way up.
You meet all these people from Newcastle in London going, it's the best city on earth. You're like, you're living in London.
Yeah.
Can't be that great.
Go to Newcastle, there's some nice people there. I like Newcastle. I like most places. I'm trying to think what I don't like. Birmingham's a bit of a shithole.
What you should say...
Oh, hold on, I'm sorry, I've sold out in Birmingham. It's fine.
Try that again with West Bromwich.
West Bromwich. Yeah. Solihull.
No.
Full of pricks, Solihull. That's where Stuart Lee grew up. So, that's all I know about. Let's talk a little bit about... I'm sort of interested in your... We'll go back to the book, but I'm interested in your pre-journalist jobs, which I'm always quite interested in with my guests. You worked from a very young age. You were put to work in a... Is that right? You was in the sewing for... You're making 50p a day. Was it 50p an hour?
It's 50p an hour, yeah. Yeah. I mean, not many laughs in illegal child slave labour.
No.
I think the owner is dead now, which is a great thing.
Okay.
It's how I feel about that time. I mean...
How old were you when you were working in the...
I was 10 years old. I was actually on 30p an hour, and... I got my first wage packet and I cried. And he gave me a pay rise to 50p an hour. And then I did 90 hours a week. I mean, I can't quite believe it happened, you know. Apparently, it still happens in places like West Bromwich.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it was insane. I can't believe it happened.
Yeah. What were you sewing for?
Well, that's the thing. I'm a specialist with women's blouses.
Are you?
Yeah. So did you know the buttons on women's blouses are on the other side?
Yes, I did know that.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
Why is men that? I don't know.
Because their brains are all wired up wrong, isn't it? So that's what it is.
But yeah,
they couldn't do a normal man shirt up, could you? It's too confusing. Put them on the other side to make it easy. It's what? The maid would do it.
All right.
It was worth heckling, and it was great to hear it three times. That's what I'm saying. That's. I heard you the first time, and I just thought, that is such a good heckle. I want him to say that indistinctly three times. If you don't understand the heckle, you don't have to answer. That is the beauty of working in Wolverhampton for me. So, I love it here. I love you. I love you. You're great. You worked in... You did burgers? Anything good about working?
Yeah, I got rejected
burgers?
From Penn Road McDonald's.
Right.
And ended up in Burger King.
Okay. And anyone been served by in Burger King? Anyone remember?
It's closed.
Well, it wasn't closed when he worked there. It's closed. It closed 30 years ago, and this is a ghost.
All I remember from then is that there was a member of staff who hated vegetarians so much, whenever someone ordered a bean burger, he'd put it down his trousers before cooking it.
Which
you're definitely going to have to delete that.
Which side?
We can't afford the legal fees.
Which side of his trousers did it go down?
Through the pants.
Okay, but which side was it? The poo exit, or that? I was trying to think of a polite way. Was it the bottom or the penis?
Let's say it's left for left wingers, okay. Vegetarians or something.
It could go down his bum or down on his cock. That's a very different. You know, that might, if it's been on his genital. I don't know why I'm riffing on this, because he's already said we're cutting it. We might get away with it. You never know. And then you went to Cambridge, which you must probably be the first person from Wolverhampton to go that far, just geographically, let alone to the university. And I'll stop when you stop laughing and start throwing things.
Look, we have a Starbucks,
yeah,
and a sushi restaurant.
No.
Yeah, in Wolverhampton.
I was reading in the Dudley Express, and it's the Express and Star, that in Dudley, a Chinese restaurant's been closed down because of rat dropping. So you're not... Your newspaper is not backing up your culinary delights. That's what I'm saying.
No, and actually, I grew up in an area called Park Village, and I was thinking, you know, maybe it's not so bad anymore. And it became international news when a kebab shop was found... to have housed a dead body for 2 days. as they served kebabs.
Right. On the little spinny thing.
Well,
that's something odd about that. It's delicious. It's weirdly tasty.
It became the most read item on BBC News for like several months because of that, I think. I think people thought, oh, that's what they're serving in kebab shops.
Yeah, I mean, I'd give it a go. If it was there, or if they were already dead and it was already... I wouldn't murder someone to do it, but if they were already... If they died of natural causes and it was their final
wish... It's like one of your questions. A bean burger that's gone through someone's pants.
Yeah.
Or
I need
kebab.
To know which side, and if it's the don't keep referring back to it if you want it to be cut out. So that's it's staying in now, definitely staying in. So you went to Cambridge, and I was listening to another podcast you on, and you were discussing that you didn't have many friends at Cambridge.
Well, basically, three of us became friends.
Yeah.
Three men, and then we became very exclusive.
Yes,
and we didn't allow any other friends in the group, and we also didn't allow each other to have girlfriends.
Right.
Yeah. So it was like a homosexually erotic menage a trois without any sex.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Never any sex. Well, the people were John Oliver was one of the people.
John was. He had more sex than us.
Did he?
Yeah. And there's Lachlan Gowdy, who's now a TV presenter.
Okay.
And there's a guy called Joel. But yeah, basically, it was quite a strange place to go to after Wolverhampton. You know, people spoke English. And the weirdest thing is that I was poor and I pretended to be rich, because that's what you do if you're an immigrant family. You don't want to go on about how little money you have. You want to pretend you drive a Mercedes. Whereas there were lots of rich people there pretending to be poor. Did you have that experience at Oxford?
I think the interesting about this book is it resonates with me a lot, even though our lives are quite different in a lot of ways. But similarly, I came from a middle class family, but a family of teachers, and not many people went to my parents are the first people in our families have gone to university, and then me and my brother went to Oxford, and it was that was quite a big deal. But I was so in awe of everyone, and so thinking, oh my god, they're going to find me out. And it is full of, as you were saying in the interview, it's full of very posh people who all seem to know each other because they do know each other because they all went to the same school. Whereas I was,
they went on skiing trips together.
Yeah. So I was very intimidated by it, and lots of people. Weirdly, I was at a college which had a lot more comprehensive kids in the college at St. Cat's, but they almost were as bad because they had a chip on their shoulder the other way, so they were all stuck together and didn't want to go and explore the university. So I had a quite horrible time being bullied in two directions until I discovered comedy, which sounds like a similar...
And then you get bullied by your audience.
Yeah, well, you felt like, it was... I found my people in the university after about a term or two, And but I was at university at the same time as Boris Johnson and Michael Gove. I've had so many opportunities to kill Michael Gove in my life. Like we literally did. I've mentioned this before. But we literally did comedy in the Oxford Union Jazz Cellar, which was underground, basically beneath the massive auditorium in which they all did their debates. And it was like the cellars at the House of Commons. So we could, Armando Iannucci and Al Murray and Stuart Lee, we could have all decided to become assassins. And if we'd known the future, we could have been the new Guy Fawkes. You could have been buying...
Well, I have a much more mundane dilemma in relation to Michael Gove. I worked with him. He worked as a colleague of mine in the Times. And he's actually quite a nice guy.
No, he isn't.
But his politics are insane.
Yes.
And the other year, he sent me a Facebook friend request. And I just haven't been able to accept it. I just thought, can you accept it? I mean, I'd be laughed out of Wolverhampton. Although Wolverhampton is very Brexity.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah, well, I assume so,
Very Brexity. And I came back the day after Brexit and was visiting my mom, and one of my Indian relatives came over and said, oh, this Brexit thing, isn't it great? Because now all the Muslims will fuck off. And I was like, I don't think you've thought this through entirely.
Well, everyone voted for a different reason. Nobody's going to get what they wanted. It's kind of fair. I'm sort of thinking, I'm now very much hard Brexit. My plan, hard Brexit, no deal. We leave, we have no medicine, no food. Then the EU just have to send us food and medicine for humanitarian relief for free. we spend the rest of the money on the NHS. That's
my solution. I think that's actually Jacob Rees-Mogg's plan.
It might be. I don't think anyone's got any plan. This is going out. We're recording this in the beginning of February. It's going to go out in mid-February. So I'm sure by the time this goes out, everyone at home will know exactly what's happening with Brexit. It will all have been sorted. They couldn't leave it that late, right? To still not know what they were doing.
Do you think your fans are obviously Remainy? But do you think these guys are Remainy or Brexit?
I think this is the people who voted Remain in Wolverhampton in this room. And
I'm really curious. You'll ask them.
Yeah, we can ask them. Who voted to remain in the...
Yeah, oh my God.
Not everyone, there's some guys here. Yeah, these guys, they're still... They're not only still... There's clasp in there. You think you're right? Are you from Stoke? Yeah, okay. It'd be interesting to see what happens, wouldn't it? I sort of think everyone should get... Now we have to tattoo Brexit or Remain on our heads.
Wow.
And it doesn't have to be what you voted, but it has to be which side you're going now. I think if we did that, I think this might be an answer genuinely. If we had to just decide now, remain or leave, you have to register as that, whichever it is. If more people register Remain, we don't go, right? But if we leave and it turns out to be a disaster, everyone with leave, who's registered as leave, doesn't get any food or medicine, and everyone who voted Remain does. If it goes the other way, all the people who voted leave get food and medicine first, extra.
It's a good idea.
And then we'll work it out who was right, which is basically just what it's about, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's why I quite want to just go hard Brexit, just because otherwise... Yeah. I think people will go, oh, no, but we didn't do it properly. It wasn't what I said. I thought the Muslims were going home. So, you know, I think I've got to go full in. I'm fully committed.
I think you need to be more specific, because food is too an abstract concept. If you have to talk, about KFC and Nando's and tell people they can't have KFC, that's when it becomes real. And, yeah. So
Magnums, you might not be able to have Magnums. That's going to upset some of this audience. it's a disaster. It's a terrible, terrible disaster. Was John Oliver funny at university when you knew him at university?
Well, we had a running joke between us that Joel, who was not a comedian, was funnier than John. This hilarious joke we had. John was annoyingly funny, and his friend Richard Ayoade.
Yeah, he's quite good. You were with quite a good little crew of... I think it was quite a fecund time for comedy, because often those, especially those universities, around that time, I was a bit earlier than you, but there were lots of periods of time where there wasn't any good comedians coming out of Oxbridge.
No, and Dave Mitchell was there too, and I wasn't part of any of it, really.
No.
I was, studying Shelley and doing really Asian geeky things, like investing my student loan into shares. Into Railtrack shares and doubling the money and then gloating about it. You know, I wish I'd been more creative.
That sounds pretty good, having money. The first term I was at university, we got we got some kind of grant back then, but I think it was from my parents, because they weren't wealthy, but you had to be poor to get the grant. But because I cooked my own food, I'd had a year off, as it was called then, and I'd learnt to cook, so I cooked my own food, and I wasn't drinking because I had exams at the end of the first term, and I was sure I was going to get kicked out. And I had about 300 quid left at the end of the first term. It was amazing. Everyone else had spent their whole year's budget, and I had money left. It was great being on my own, eating beans and drinking lemonade.
Happy days.
It was great. I had a terrible time. I hated, I just sort of, apart from the... It was a very weird... And because I didn't... You worked hard and you got, an incredible degree. And I didn't work hard and I'd always got done well at exams. And I was thinking about this the other day. I was so depressed in the last term when I realised I was not going to be able to pass my exams. And, I still dream about it.
I have A-level stress dreams. But, yeah, it's a weird place, Oxbridge, because mainly... The thing that makes it great is the thing that makes it terrible. Because you get there and it's like, we've been here 2,000 years or 1,000 years, and therefore you don't matter. And you don't. I go to Cambridge now and I feel exactly how I did at 19. You're a speck. You're going to be replaced, aren't you? Yeah. And I think I would have been happier somewhere where I didn't feel like that.
True, but I think it's interesting because there's a snobbery backwards at Oxbridge, and you say go to Oxbridge and people make an assumption about you, which just happens a lot on the comments of my YouTube videos, because people say I bring it up all the time and I fucking don't ever mention it ever. I've never even talked about it. But, you know, it's why you've talked about this, about how to get more ethnic and working class people into Oxbridge, but that's what it should be, isn't it? It should be the problem with it is it's not the cleverest people are getting in, it's the people who are paying the most money for education. But it's still about 50-50, isn't it, in public schools versus...
Yeah, but only 7% of people went to public school.
Yeah, I know. So, yeah. But I do also feel like if you were paying to have your child educated and then you didn't get into good university, you'd go, hey, why did I pay all that money out?
Yeah.
So you can understand why, you know, it's like going, hey, I've spent loads of money on...
And also there's an argument, I understand the argument that, say, if, you know, you've worked very hard, you have children, you know, you want the best for your kids, don't you?
Nah, I don't want to send them to public school, though. No offence. I'd like them to be ordinary. But, you know, it's how do you think, they should be trying to get more working class people, more people from Wolverhampton going to Cambridge?
Absolutely, sort of? Yeah.
How do they do it? How do they make that happen?
You just don't have these weird rules that they have, and this weird application process, the interview, which just seems to be entirely aimed at getting people who are like yourself into the university.
Yeah.
You know? When you get your free degree, another ridiculous thing you have, Oxbridge, after 3 years, you get a free MA.
Yeah.
How do we let that happen? But I went back with John, and we drove up, and we were saying, look, maybe we were chippy during our 3 years. Maybe all our colleagues at college weren't wankers. Why don't we not talk to each other all day and talk to the other students who were there? And we spent a day talking to the other people, and we caught up the next day, and independently, we were like, they were utter wankers. Sometimes you just get bad years. And I think we had a very uptight, geeky kind of bunch of kids.
Well, you know, clever people are annoying, aren't they? And rich people are annoying. So it's going to be the worst to get them all together in one place. I mean, you just sort of, by the end, I realised how, you know, that's the problem, is you feel, they're so confident. I mean, I know you went to grammar school and you get, but that sort of public school thing is... People are taught to just be confident, and that's 90% of getting anywhere, isn't it?
Yeah, totally, yeah.
And that's why we've been led, by lions led by donkeys, into a terrible disaster. Who've managed to convince... What I love about the Brexit... Not to go on about Brexit too much, but what I love about it is the way that they've managed to... The people believe that the elite are the people opposing Brexit. Yeah. And Jacob Rees-Mogg, Boris Johnson, Nigel Farage, that these people are not the elite, apparently. It's incredible double thing, and well done to them. They deserve everything they've got. I hope the guillotine will come back. Post the revolution, that will definitely happen after this. Anyway, let's talk about you. We'll move on to your journalist career. You've done, you did lots of celebrity interviews, so I want to get some tips on you to interview the many, many incredible celebrities.
I think I was a really crap celebrity interviewer. I think it was Marty Amos who said, the problem with doing celebrity interviews is that, as a journalist, on some level, you want them to have a nervous breakdown and fall apart, because that's a good copy. But also, because they're a celebrity, you want them to be your friend. So there's a twin thing going on there.
Yeah.
And the way I solved that problem in my 20s is by just being rude to absolutely everyone.
I couldn't imagine that. Couldn't imagine that working.
I was so rude.
Yeah.
And so rude, actually, that I got into my 30s and I apologised to three people who I thought I'd been unreasonable to.
Well, because I think, like, I've been interviewed and now interview people, so I kind of get that. I get why people have been rude, but I also sort of think, you know, it's not probably the way to get what you want out of people, really. Because if you've got people on the defensive, even if, you know, you'd be interviewed by people from the paper, you know, especially the tabloids, but even the papers, you'd sort of be aware that they're going to try and find some little thing and take a quote out, and they're going to use the worst possible photo of you. And they always did.
Yeah.
And so that means every time you went back to do the next interview, you go, well, I don't trust, you know. And so you're the person's immediately clamming up. Whereas if you're just quite nice and like the person you're interviewing... Yeah. But you interviewed some amazing people. You interviewed Bernard Matthews, the turkey guy. Remember him?
That was a great interview.
It was a good interview. You know, I've been reading your interviews. They're on your website. I can read them all.
Not only just because he never gave interviews, for obvious reasons, given he was murdering billions of turkeys.
Yeah.
I've got to be careful legally here. He's dead, though. You can't libel the dead, can you?
Well, he did murder. I mean, I don't know if you call it murder. I don't know if it's technically murder.
Well, I was going to say something about the state of the factories, but yeah. I mean, he also looked like a turkey. he had turkey portraits up.
Do you think...
It's like quite a weird thing.
Do you think he was a turkey who just crossed the lines? The only way I can save myself is to kill all the others.
That's quite a weird thing, to enter your turkeys in for prizes,
yeah,
have them painted, yeah, and then to murder billions. It's quite a weird psychology going on there.
Yeah.
And then to look like a turkey on top, yeah, of it. But interviews are such strange things. Nowadays, I do fewer of them. But sometimes it's the combination of interviews. I interviewed Shajid Javid the other day.
Oh, yes.
That was such a strange experience because, you know, he's brown. And I arrived and he began talking to me in Punjabi.
Okay.
I was like, oh my God, you're like me. You're obviously an alien. You're a Tory minister, but you're a bit like me. And I just found that so destabilizing. And then the next day I was interviewing Bross. So in my head, I was writing all this stuff about Asian sex gangs because we had a long conversation about the most difficult subject in British politics, which is Asian sex gangs.
I thought it was with Bross. I thought that was...
And the next minute, you know, Matt and Luke... Yeah. What the fuck's going on there? I had no idea what's going on there. And then that whole thing went viral, you know?
Yeah.
The Bross documentary. You've seen it?
I have. It's incredible.
And I've lost any sense, because they're now proud of it. They're proud of that documentary. And yet, it seems to me the documentary's taking the piss.
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I think the only way that it's fascinating, that there's so, it's so, it's such a brilliant documentary, and it's a fascinating portrait of being brothers and being, you know, I've been in double acts. I understand the sort of petty arguments, and thank God, you know, my life wasn't filmed. Yeah, yeah. Of course, you have those struts, but they're brothers as well. I think that out of the end of it, I think it's quite inspiring. They sort of come together, sort of. Yeah. Don't you think the really interesting thing about it is one of them's had lots of work done and one of them hasn't. And so the one who's had lots of work done is looking at the other one going, why are you giving the game away? And the one who's who's not is going, oh, fuck, you know, I could look like that if I'd had the work done.
No, I asked them about this. And so obviously one's got hair, one hasn't. So you're like, hair transplant. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, his brother said, I had stress-induced alopecia. So either his brother's being very kind.
He's joining in with it too.
With the lights.
But it's also this, you know, one of them's got like a skeleton face and one of them's got a lovely, like, smooth alabaster, skin taken off a child's bottom and stitched to his face. I went to school with Bross.
Seriously?
For 1 year. They moved to Cheddar in Somerset where I grew up and they were at Fairlands Middle School. And I think in the opening titles you see them wearing the Fairlands, it just flashes by so quick I can't be sure, but I think they were wearing the Fairlands Middle School uniform. They both beat up my friend Chris Scard.
I didn't think my Sajid Javid Bross experience could get any weirder.
I kind of was thinking they won't come on my show, but I wonder whether the Cheddar connection might be enough to get them on. I think it's fascinating that thing. They were treated so badly, I think, even though they probably made the most of the fun they were having as kids. And they were completely chewed up and spat out. And there's just something in the drama of them coming back together. Luke is the drummer, isn't it? He's not drummed for 25 years. And so then he's got this weird thing where he has to pretend to be this incredible musician with all the other... He's a prick to all the musicians.
Yeah, because obviously his drumming was great in Bross.
Yeah. But he's up that, you know, he's up there going, oh, can we do it like, you know, can we, oh, you've got to have truth and integrity. And he's upping it. And the guy who's performing at Las Vegas every night is trying to kind of come down to meet him. And I've watched it twice and I identified with the different one each time. I did. I thought, Matt's such a prick. And then I watched the second time, oh, no, Luke's the prick. It's Luke. And then, yeah.
They're a fascinating study in how celebrity totally fucks you up.
Yeah.
And I always think of this bit in Robbie Williams' biography. I don't know. It's a really great book written by Chris Heath. He's a really good writer.
Okay.
I don't know if I've slightly exaggerated this bit of the book, but I think there's a bit where Robbie's dad says that he's sometimes starstruck by Robbie Williams.
God.
And I always think of that. I just think that's what celebrity does. It's like in Lord of the Rings. You know the ring? It makes everyone go... You think you'll be okay with the ring, but the moment you get near it, you go mad.
Yeah.
And it's the same with celebrity. You think you'll be fine with meeting Richard Herring.
Yes.
But then you meet him and you lose your mind. You know, and I've seen it happen a lot. And actually, I've seen celebrities. You see celebrities going crazy over other celebrities.
Yeah.
And it's never anything I ever want in my life. So we can't be friends, Richard.
Okay, that's fine. I'm not. There are people you see and they're only friends with celebrities. And sometimes it's quite... We had... I'm trying to think who it was.
Stuart Lee?
No, Sanjeev Bhaskar, and he had these brilliant stories about being friends with Roger Moore and Eric Idle, and, you know, he's kind of friends with loads of celebrities.
Yeah, he's really affable.
But in a really affable, nice way. And then there are other people who, their only friends are celebrities, and they don't know, and it's sort of, you go, God, that's sort of weird. Why aren't you friends with people you were at school with? Why are you friends with Elton John? That's weird. He's 50 years older than you. What's going on?
I also understand why they are, because it gets too crazy. It takes so much... When you're friends with civilians, if you're a celebrity, you know, as they call them, you know, it must be weird for them, you know, because they want a bit, you know, of something. It's like having a lot of money. It makes everyone go mad.
Yeah, it does. It's interesting.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. And then it's interesting that documentary is going to make Bros have the resurgence that they failed to have.
Actually, and that shows you how they've gone mad, in that they've seen people like you have watched it twice.
Yeah.
And they've interpreted that as a fact, as a reflection of their great music. And it's not why you're watching it twice.
Yeah, well, Bros never... The music was never it, but then the image was always it. I don't know. I think there's a kind of real... We won't just talk about Bros all night, but it's... might talk about the boy with the top knot at some point. But, you know, I just think there's such drama in the fact they're family. I mean, this is touching on what you've written about. It's the, you know, it's that bond between family and the breaks between family. And... There's, you know, they want to come back. There's something kind of... I think they come out of it all right in the end, and because they are a bit stupid. And I think they've been set up a little bit to be, you know, they've taken out the bits where they're being pretentious.
Yeah.
They want to be, you know... Matt wants to be an intellectual, and he's...
They became famous at a very, very young age.
Yeah.
That must be... Who is it who said, basically, once you become famous, you stop developing as a human being? Because you don't need to ever think about how you behave. You can get away with anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it explains why people become famous as children are the most fucked up.
I think it's very, very hard when you see child actors and, you know, it's difficult. You're given everything, everyone's banged down to you. And it is, you have to have some failure to understand. I think I've had enough now, though. It'd be nice to go back. It'd be nice to go back to being successful. Not ever have to play Bilston Town Hall ever. Imagine that. Never.
You're very famous. I remember. We've actually met before.
We've met before.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh oh.
It was about 15 years ago, and you were at a friend's wedding.
Oh yes.
And
that's unusual for a start.
So I don't know how to talk about this, but basically, you were dating someone.
Yes.
And you were obviously visibly having lots of sex. You know when you at the start of a relationship,
yes,
you're just so into each other,
yes,
and you were in the sex cave.
Yeah, we were. I think I know who it is now.
And so we were like, we're just going to leave those guys alone. We couldn't even communicate with you guys. So,
right.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my memory.
Thank
of you.
Yeah, it was good. Those good memories. I think we had sex at the wedding in the garden.
Yes, you did. I was being polite. I wasn't going to mention that, but yeah, everyone knew.
Yeah, good. We didn't care. So,
I'm glad I got off my chest.
Damn, he threw me.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Let's talk about you. Let's talk about you failing to have sex for many years. I don't know, I think what's interesting about this book, and which is The Boy with the Top Knot, which will be for sale in the lobby after the show.
I don't care if people don't buy it because I got my advance.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's very much how I feel about emergency questions, which is never going to sell enough. But again, you can buy this in the lobby after the show. Well, I'm back there. In fact, I am. I think they split us up. So it won't be embarrassing for whichever of us sells less books.
That will be me.
I'm not sure. I you know, it is what I said. I think it's that it's you're covering a lot of serious subjects in this book. It's about you discovering at a sort of embarrassingly late age that members of your family had schizophrenia, and you hadn't realised until you were sort of 25, and you had to find a note in a suitcase to confirm your dad had schizophrenia. So there's a lot of serious subject matter in there, but what it's just that I think, you know, a lot of it resonates, I think, for anyone growing up in the 70s and 80s, but also I think, like, I grew up in a quite Christian family, that strictness, which is not the same as the as what you're getting from your parents, but a lot of it resonates. And that weirdly, the thing that probably no one has ever picked up in an interview, I'll talk about this first, the thing that kind of was the most evocative bit for me was where you talked about, A, going into a sweet shop and working out what you're going to buy. You couldn't just have sweets all the time. But you talk about getting a bounty with your dad and keeping the little black bit of cardboard underneath the bounty so that you could sniff it later on and relive the pleasure of having it. I mean, it's like something out of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. But it was so... I didn't like Bounty, but...
Why did you say that? Because Charlie and the Chocolate Factory was my favourite book.
Was it? Yeah.
And you know, I just found out recently that Roald Dahl wanted a brown kid to play Charlie.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and I really identified that with that whole thing because, you know, a whole family living in a bed. It wasn't that dissimilar to what actually my childhood was like.
Yeah.
You know, and... yeah. Anyway, there's not many laughs in schizophrenia.
No. Well, you know, it's but what you've done is created this, you know, it's a lovely insight into something that's very different to my upbringing, but also the things that are similar are really interesting. And I think that idea of you know, I was very worried about transgressing religion and that sort of thing as a kid, and
but all families are the same.
Yeah.
I should write a Russian novel beginning with that line. Yeah, they're all the same. I mean, basically, because I'm Sikh, we're a tiny community. There's about 300,000 of us, the same size as the Jewish community in Britain.
Right.
So I wouldn't ever expect anyone to be particularly interested in my background. I wouldn't expect anyone to be particularly interested in Wolverhampton, you know. But I do think all families are, you know, are fundamentally the same. And the thing that unites us all is that it's very hard to talk to your family.
Yeah.
Oddly, they're the people you know best, but it's impossible to talk to them.
Well, that's how you could... It's interesting how you could live your whole childhood and not have worked any of this stuff. I mean, you know, sleep in the same room as your parents until you're 10 and not work out what was going on. You know, not even... It seemed to be like a bolt from the blue from the...
Yeah, well, you kind of just wanted to get out.
Yeah.
You know, if your mission in life is to get out, you don't want to dwell on the past. And then, but the problem is eventually you keep running and then you hit a crisis and you have to look back.
Yeah.
I think you also
it's very like what happened to Bross. That's what happened to you.
Actually, now you say that.
It is. Yeah. That's what's beautiful about it. So, you know, it is this journey of you as a childish man. Like, I guess we had a sort of similar 20s, I suppose. And, you know, you're going off. I was leaving Somerset behind, you were leaving Wolverhampton behind, and going to London and having this supposedly glamorous lifestyle, which is a bit empty and weird.
Yeah.
And then you realising that you've got to go back home. Well, it's sort of interesting because you're still, the journalist is still there, I think, and the writer's still there. You're going back partly to be with your family and help your family, and partly because you realise that story's more interesting than talking to Samuel L. Jackson or whoever you were talking to at the time.
No, exactly. And actually, it happens all the time. I mean, Catherine Moran is from down the road. She's one of my colleagues, and she's been on your show. And she's done the same thing. She writes a lot about Wolverhampton. And it's a universal thing. That you eventually get to an age where you become interested in where you're from. And you realise it's you. It's part of you, you know?
Yeah.
And, lots of people left Wolverhampton tend to talk about it. Lenny Henry. Mira Sayal's written a book about Sanjeev Bhaskar's wife.
His grandma.
And his grandma, weirdly. Yeah. That's pretty fucked up, isn't it?
I didn't really talk to him about it.
So, yeah, it's quite weird to me that I've written two books about Wolverhampton, given I wanted to get the hell out.
Yeah. But you come back, you know, you want to come back. And it's on your website, there's a film of you visiting your childhood home, which is kind of a... You know, I did that. I went back and looked at my grandparents' houses in Middlesbrough. Other people live there now. I didn't feel comfortable knocking on the door and saying, can I come and look at my old house? Like, but it's so... That's such a weird thing, isn't it? When the time has passed. I don't know how long it had been since you lived in that house.
Quite a while. 20 years, yeah.
So it was a similar thing. My grandparents have been dead for about 20 years. You go back and look at those houses and you go, God, this street is much smaller than I remembered, and these houses are tiny. And to see you kind of walking in and remembering...
Yeah, and it was much rougher than I thought.
Yeah.
And the other day I thought, maybe I should look up whether it is actually rough, because Lewis Hamilton, the F1 driver, was in trouble for describing Stevenage as a slum, and they actually worked out his old house was worth £1 million.
Right.
So I was like, oh, I go around talking about how Park Village is a shithole, and actually, maybe it's posh. So I googled the house, right move, and we sold our house in 1988 for £27,000. That house is now worth £28,000.
You got a good deal, man. 27.
That must be the worst appreciation of property. And also, there's a crack den opposite.
Yeah. Well, I know, but you go in the garden
fire. The garden was on fire.
Yeah, but everyone, because all the community was sick and they'd all grown crops and stuff there, and now it's all just weeds growing up. Yeah. So there was obviously that community. Has the whole community moved on and it's just been taken
off? Yeah, I mean, all the Indians have, socially mobile. They've all bought their Mercedes and they've got driveways in Wolverhampton. I mean, I walk around Wolverhampton occasionally for elections and stuff, and I can always tell which houses are Indian and which ones aren't. I mean, the Indians always pave over their driveways. There's always shoes outside in the patio, and there's always a Mercedes or a BMW on the driveway. Yeah. And they're very socially mobile community.
Yeah, and sell high and get out before it goes depreciates. Good work. And so that part of moving away. I mean, there's that. I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to give away too much stuff in the book because it's
because you haven't finished it yet.
I haven't finished it, but I've taken a journey through. Skipped some bit.
Should have just watched the TV thing.
It's easier, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you've got two fucking little kids, it's a lot easier to watch telly than to read. But there's obviously, your siblings weren't brought up that religiously, and you, as the younger one, were brought up.
Yeah, I was like a religious experiment. So
yeah.
As a Sikh, the strict Sikhs don't cut their hair. So I had hair down to my knees, basically, which was weird because no one else in my family did. And so that felt odd.
Yes, and, but that is quite odd to bring that in later, isn't it?
Yeah. And so I then had my hair cut, which was
a dramatic thing to do.
Yeah, it was. And it changed my life instantly. I mean, the kids at school didn't recognize me. It was that dramatic.
Yeah.
And I went from someone who was ignored by girls to someone where occasionally girls would look in my direction. And it was transformative. But I think to be a bit psychoanalytical about it all, if you've ever been bullied in your life or if you've ever felt self-conscious, you never get rid of that. You know, especially if you grow up like that at the formative years of your life. On some level, I'm still that kid.
Yeah, I understand that. I do kind of empathise with that as well. I sort of feel like we're all. I think but you remember the times you were bullied, and I'm not saying you would. You would. You know, there's more to be bullied about, but you don't remember the times that you were the bully. You know, I mean, I think that's. I think everyone's sort of a bully, and everyone's bullied on some level in that kind of waiting for Godot sort of. you're kicking the person with one leg. You know, if you've got one leg or whatever. But it's. you know, it's just human cruelty, isn't it? And it's that human nature to kind of to find your status and to, which I suppose, you know, is a lot to do with the religions as well. But it's
Yeah, kids are bastards.
Yeah,
you know that as a father.
Yeah, mine are all they're horrible, horrible monsters. But yeah, it's but you know, I had a similar thing. I mean, I didn't have as dramatic. It's a dramatic way to rebel.
Did you have a turban?
I didn't have anything to. I had a New Testament that I stopped reading. but you know, I knew similarly. You know, I knew at 8 or 9 that it wasn't for me. That religious, does it still hang in there sometimes? Is it hard?
It's come back. It comes back occasionally. I mean, the religion's great in theory. You know, I've started wearing this kara, which is another signs of the faith. It's the only sign I have left, but. It's a great religion in theory. So is Christianity in theory. But it gets corrupted and it becomes the opposite of what it's meant out to be. Yeah.
And so there's obviously a big part of it is the your mother's wanting you to be in a relationship with a Sikh girl and you not want it, certainly once you're in London.
Yeah, and I had this weird time where I basically was going along with the arranged marriage meetings my parents were putting me up with and having a girlfriend. And I actually had a flat in London where John lived, occasionally with his comedy friends, like Daniel Kitson, I think, at one point. And I lived with my girlfriend. And if my parents ever came to London, I'd pretend I was living in the flat and I'd put up pictures of Guru Nanak everywhere and pretend I was living there. It was quite extreme. And then I'd go on these dates where they're quite odd things because they're arranged marriage meetings, so you can't be in any way sexual.
Right.
Because your parents will hear about it.
Yes.
So you can't flirt. But at the same time, you have to, kind of. And I had so many strange meetings. And the strangest one is I once went to a London hotel bar to meet this girl. Wasn't interested, but then she was quite attractive. Became interested. Yes. And about 10 minutes into the drink, she went, you know, I was really nervous about meeting you, so I hope you don't mind. But I brought some of my friends along with me. And I was like, you're right. There's normally not any Indians in this bar. And there's 10.
Right.
She called me and it was all 10. Right. She'd brought 10 people along with her.
That's a good idea.
And then they all came over and I had to buy them a round of drinks.
Right.
As they interrogated me in this kind of job interview situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think, I mean, the older I get, the more I think arranged marriage is quite a good idea.
That's the thing. I now think it's a great idea.
Because I sort of think, you know, this illusion of choice and you're waiting for the one. And actually marriage, as much as I love my darling wife and she is the most wonderful woman on the planet, I mean, you just got to fucking get on with it. That's the problem. So the things that I've been through with my wife, if it had happened to me when I was 20, I'd have been out the door.
Yeah.
But it's only because we were married. And it would be much more sensible for a grown-up to say, this would be a good person for you to marry.
Yeah, it's like the Starbucks menu. There's too much choice. I remember when Starbucks opened in Wolverhampton. I went in and someone at the checkout was trying to order some fish and chips. But that's the thing, there's too much choice, isn't there? And arranged marriages kind of work. Yeah. But now I'm too old for it.
Are you too old? What?
Yeah, to make it, you and I have got no chance in an arranged marriage. You need to be 27 and work for Goldman Sachs.
Right.
So you're what, 49?
Oh, yeah, let's say that. I'm 51. Thank you, though. I'll take those 2 years. I'm back in my 40s. It's amazing.
51-year-old running a successful podcast series. Ain't going to work.
No.
Sorry about that.
Your mum was hot. If someone had offered an arranged marriage for your mum, you know, when she was young, I'm not sick.
Do you know Sikhs carry swords? Daggers.
Yeah, okay.
There's a lot of Sikhs in Wolverhampton. That's all I'm saying.
It's a kind of compliment. Was it you tweeted the other day, the guy at the baseball or basketball match with the... He's sitting with his girlfriend and it's a Sikh guy, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
And he... But that sort of sums it up, that he's got his arm around a girl and then the love camera thing that they do at those American games goes on this guy and he realises everyone can see him and then he just is so badly sort of pretends he hasn't...
Yeah, he's an Indian guy. You missed out the crucial detail.
Okay, yes, of course, yeah. Well, yeah, but that's it. So he knows that he shouldn't be there with this girl.
Yeah.
And that he's going to get discovered in this way that you're talking about, that your parents, you were terrified about your mum finding out when you were dating.
That's the thing, even if you were dating someone Indian, I had an Indian sort of girlfriend seeing someone Indian in my teens. Where'd you take them in Wolverhampton without being spotted? And also, those were the days...
So,
that's the thing. You go to the library. Did you have a sexy incident in the library with an Indian bloke? Yeah.
That was me and the girl from the wedding.
You can't have sex in the bush if you're Indian in Wolverhampton. So it was either the library or the train station platform. Because there was no pub. They wouldn't let you in. No Starbucks. And you couldn't be seen by your parents. And the irony is they changed the ending of my book for the TV series to Wolverhampton train station. Right. So it went a full loop.
Yeah.
So for me, it has very romantic connotations, that station.
It's interesting. But, you know, I think, like, again, I think my parents, you know, my parents have been together since they were 13 and 14. So they've essentially...
Pre-legal.
Yeah. Well, they didn't have sex till they were married when they were 22.
Wow.
So it's a real generational thing. I think a lot of the things some of them are unique to being Sikh, but I think that idea, just a generational thing, and maybe it's a generation apart, you know, maybe it's a decade or so apart, but for my parents, you know, I thought that I had to be... My first girlfriend should be the girl I spent the rest of my life with. It's not how it turned out. I was sort of, the minute that dream got broken in a way, you know, that was sort of what partly sent me the other way in life. But you know, there was that expectation.
Yeah.
In this country as well. And things have sort of changed so much. It's interesting to see, I think that's what, it's interesting to see how a different culture, someone coming into a different culture, or a family coming into a different culture, to be fair, because you were obviously born here, so it's always been your country. But that being then pressed against the traditions that your parents brought from the Punjab, that's the way that you find the balance and the way that those things can, that cultures intermingle and work.
Yeah, I think it was very much of my generation. I meet kids now, they don't have any of these problems. You know, they're so confident. And you were kids walking around with turbans. They really own their identity. They're not self-conscious. They're not tortured about it. I just think it is our generation in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, and people are much more confident about these things. But also, I mean, I have 54 first cousins. I mean, can you imagine what that's like? But most of them had arranged marriages or introductions. But very successful. I'm the failure.
Do they work? Do people get divorced in your family, or
yeah, occasionally, but yeah. Quite good hit rate, I'd say. Yeah, quite good hit rate.
Yeah, because see, my brother and sister, but my brother's been divorced twice, and my sister's been divorced, I think. I am the only one who's successfully been married to the same woman for almost 7 years.
What's the secret, Richard?
Secret is don't get married till you're too old for anyone else to be interested. You've got to meet your partner just at the point. When I was 40, I was bringing it home, but only for another 6 months. I didn't know that, but something within me knew that I had to capture.
I've got a theory that men settle down when they begin losing their hair.
Doesn't work.
No, did you slightly start losing your hair? No.
My hair was starting to go grey, maybe at 40. Mm. But now I think, I know, I'm glad I waited in some way. It's crazy. My son is just one and a bit. And I must have known this, but it just suddenly struck me that, you know, he's going to leave, when he leaves home, I'm going to be 70 years old. I think it was my mother-in-law went to the Galapagos Islands. And, you know, it would be nice to go on holidays again. And I thought, I'm going to be, by the time I'm actually free of these kids, I'm going to be, I've been dead, let's face it. But 70, I'm going to be 70 years over. My life, my non-parent life is over. That's it now. I'm just a parent and then I'm going to die and that's... There's no more fun to be had. But
you're really selling it.
But you know, you've already done the fun, so it's good because I've already done the bit that
It sounds knackering.
It is very tiring.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awful. My son was sick this morning. I had to clear up sick. They poo themselves. You have to do that. It's not so bad, that bit. I think you'd like it. I think the connection with the, it's. There's, yeah. It's a beautiful thing. My daughter is now nearly four, and it's lovely. She's very cheeky to me and says she doesn't like me, and says she loves her mum, she doesn't like me. And then the other night, she wanted me to she said, go to bed, I want you to sleep on my pillow. She's got like a bed on the floor, and so we pretend to sleep on the floor. And then she whispered to me, said, I love you, Daddy.
Oh,
but that's what I get. That's her. And I said, don't tell anyone. She said, I have to, otherwise it's a fib.
Aww.
But she hasn't told anyone. She still says she hates me outside of... She's a fucking bitch. So, it's worth it. But for those moments alone, it's worth it. But it's fucking crazy. It's brilliant.
All the research shows that parents get fucking miserable.
But you do, it's horrible.
But you don't regret it.
So that's what No, because you go through, you know, so like, especially with the second one, it's been hell this year. We've been through a lot of stuff. And that's what I say, I've been through stuff that I would not, you know, if there weren't two kids there and I wasn't a mature person, you'd go, oh, it's easier to go away from this. But you come out the other side of it and it's, you know, the good bits are really good. And, you know, which I think you have through... You're going the other way with your family. You know, I think you had that shallowness in your life. If the book's to be, you know, believed, if it isn't a slight exaggeration of the truth, it's that, you know, the vacuous life of the 20-something who's a bit affluent compared to going, okay, well, this is the stuff that's real. It's like it's very much like Bross again. It all comes back to Bross.
No, you're right. I mean, at risk of being earnest, I do think family is everything.
Yeah,
I agree.
And so that's important, you know, and that realization for you, that's the whole point. That's the, you know, that's to walk away from this life you had and this job you had, and to come back. I mean, and it's Wolverhampton. You came back to us. If I went back to my family, at least it'd be in somewhere nice, Somerset. It's like countryside and stuff there. Horses. They've cut down the only trees in Bilston to build some more buildings. Have you seen that? I was in the paper today. People are furious. The two Bilston trees have gone.
The thing about places is that when people slag off places,
yeah.
When people talk about places, they're actually talking about the people there, aren't they?
Yeah, of course.
You know, and that's my family are here, so I love it for that reason. But,
You go back to Dudley, mate. it was just one joke too many for that guy. It was that's it, I've had it. He's having a go at our trees now. But it's the same thing. It's the same thing as my daughter. That, you know, when we're lying down in bed tonight together, you, audience, and me, I'm going to go, I love you, Bilston. I do. I go everywhere, and there are places I don't like, but there are places that I just wish Wolverhampton loved me more than as much as I love Wolverhampton. That's the truth. Then I could be in the fucking jacuzzi, in the big bedroom, be in the big bedroom, the big dressing room. What a giveaway. In the Civic. It'd be wonderful. Hey, look, I haven't asked you any emergency questions. How are we doing? Oh, gosh. Look, we got to like an hour in. No,
oh, wow, that's
questions.
Good. Yeah, that's a good
time. That means you're a success. Oh, I've got some new ones.
Oh, God.
Some of them might be inspired by your book.
I was revising on the way here, and I've. Can I just say that you're a messed up person?
He had to revise what a human centipede was, and I'm not even going to do that question. I've made him look at the horrible thing. What? This is a question that comes... I've got an answer to this if you don't have an answer to this because you might have been too good. What was the weirdest reason you ever skived off school? Did you ever skive off school? He never... He was a good boy.
I was a head prefect, yeah, so yeah. I didn't, yeah.
But I was a swotty good kid. At middle school, when I was about 9, we were going to make tea and coffee in home economics. And for some reason, and until I was about 20, I was terrified about the idea of being made to drink tea or coffee. I felt like it symbolized adulthood somehow, right?
It does, though. Yeah. It? Yeah.
So even as a 10-year-old, but even as 18, I'd go around to people's houses and they'd go, oh, do you want a cup of tea? And I'd go, no, I don't drink tea. Have you got any Coke?
Cocaine.
And so, no, I was such a dull person. Apart from that one wedding where I went crazy. No one will ever find out about this. And I skived off school. I pretended to be ill, so I didn't have to go into to school and make a cup of tea. That's a weird reason to skive off school.
Yeah, I was really boring, yeah.
No, well, that's good.
Oh, I have got answers to that, but they're so bleak, I'm not going to mention them.
Okay. All right. What is the unhappiest animal you've ever seen in a zoo? Okay. I've got an answer to this one as well. Because these are new questions. I knew it would be difficult for him.
Did you know... No, this is... I've got very... Did you know there's a zoo in Dudley?
I did, yeah.
I mean,
imagine being an animal and ending up there.
Exactly.
Out of all the places you could be.
Exactly. You're allowed to slag off Dudley.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine being a lion in, like, a beautiful jungle in India. Are there lions in India? Or Africa? And ending up in Dudley.
Yeah.
Imagine that happening to you.
It's awful.
The only school trip we ever had was to Dudley Zoo. Or once we went to the sewage works.
So fans of that, did you go on that trip as well, or did you work? Do you work at the sewage works? Hooray! Oi! Fame at last. What do you do with the? Now I want you to be the guest. But I've got so many questions for you. Do you ever have to pick a turd out? You know, how manually? If it is? No. No, you've got machines. But if they get clogged up, do you have to get in there? No. Minions.
But I remember I took a clothes peg
and
put it on my nose and got a detention for it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's insulting, isn't it, to the sewage people to do that?
Yeah.
The sewage, for the Morlocks who work at the sewage.
I think of it that visit every day, every time I flush the...
Do you?
Because the things you see.
Things you see.
It's not just the shit. It's not...
The wee as well. There's wee in there as well, isn't there? Yeah. Wow, I'm glad the people at home aren't hearing this.
It's like...
This is shocking. This is the worst thing that's ever happened in their podcast. This has never been so shocked in my life. And, you know, you have to remember all that effluent comes from people in Wolverhampton as well, so that is dire. It's doubly worse.
It's like the generation game down there. I mean, people throw... cuddly toys... Crockery.
Yeah.
It's like...
Crockery.
Yeah, people throw plates down the toilet. They do, don't they?
Yeah. That kind of come down a toilet, a shopping trolley. How did no one flush that down the... Someone flushed it down the toilet and a rat reassembled it. Could happen. I was at Whipsnade Zoo with my children this week, and I saw a zebra. It was a very cold day, and the zebras were in their enclosure. And there was a zebra. There was a wall, and there's a zebra standing like that, right, just for, and didn't move. And I thought that is that. Most of the animals were fine. I just thought that animal. It's like it was like, you know, the Blair Witch Project of zebras. Just ran. Oh, that one's going. That zebra. If they could only. Get their hooves together and stab someone. And they can probably do something, can't they? It's a nice zoo apart from that Whipsnade Zoo.
Yeah.
I was in London Zoo. I saw a gorilla that looked so... Yeah, the problem is you put human characteristics onto these animals and they're probably just bored or thinking about something else. But there was a gorilla staring at me like, fucking, this is so this is so humiliating. If I could get out there, I'd rip you apart. So I don't know what I think about zoos. They're nice for the kids, though, aren't they?
Are they? Yeah. I don't think they're nice for kids anymore. I think they're intrinsically bleak. And the one in Dudley is the bleakest of all. Yeah.
What do they have in the Dudley Zoo? What's the best thing in Dudley Zoo?
I've blocked it all out. I already have memories of the sewage works. They have everything, though, I think.
They
goats.
They are bears that are now goats. They had Dudley Zoo. It's advertised as bears. When you look over, they have goats. I mean, any zoo could do that, couldn't it? Really? That's not. That's just the farm around my house could go. Yeah, we're a zoo now. There's a bear. They do hide a whale. I mean, you've got to look at stuff. All right, I've got some Wolverhampton-based questions for you. What is the tallest building in Wolverhampton?
Mander House. Oh, St. Peter's Church. Oh, fuck.
Very embarrassing. This is basically finding out if the person really knows the place they're from. It's turned out this whole book is a tissue of lies. It was built in 2009, which might have thrown you off.
Wow, what was built in 2009?
Yes, but the people of Wolverhampton, which were the... No. Which, what hall?
Student Hall.
Victoria Hall. Here's Victoria Hall. Which building? Building one. And how high is, would you say that building was? Too high. Too high. It dwarves everything else in Wolverhampton. It's an amazing 246 feet high.
It's not very high, is it?
For Wolverhampton, that is one high building, my friend. Well, who's your favourite Wolverhampton celebrity?
Oh, God, this is a... Well, I don't know if it... This is actually... What? Jazzman, the guy from Babylon Zoo. Thanks. Yes. Yeah, Jazzman, the guy from Babylon Zoo. Yeah. Remember the one-hit wonder, Spaceman?
Spaceman, yeah.
And his mum goes to the same temple as my mum.
Wow. Wow, there you go.
Connections.
Have you ever seen Jimmy Carr's dad around? When you've been, I mean, he's from Dudley.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that whether you mix. What drew your family to Wolverhampton?
Obviously, the racism. Enoch Powell, the MP. Yeah. So many highlights. The National Front.
Yeah.
The fact that Wolverhampton Wanderers fans at the time went around in KKK hoods.
Did they?
Yeah. Even the 70s.
I mean, that kind of before the immigrants even arrived. They can't... The immigrants being here must have been part of that, surely. They wouldn't go, we hate immigrants so much since the 16th century.
No. But, I mean, I was completely oblivious to it. I remember someone had put some NF graffiti on near our house. And I didn't know what it was. I just liked the logo.
Nigel Farage.
They were prophets. But I remember scrawling it onto a balloon and my sister popping it, saying, don't do that. And she never really explained why.
Yeah.
And then Nigel Farage happened.
It's interesting with that, because we, growing up in Somerset, you know, we had no real understanding of anything in the world. There was like one black kid in the village.
I've been to Somerset, yeah. I can believe that.
Yeah, and you know, he's an adopted boy who had come to the village in one family. And, you know, so all that imagery, and because of punk, and we all got punk a little bit late, and punk appropriated a lot of those images. And so we were putting swastikas and NF on things, not even knowing what any of it meant at all.
Yeah.
And having no connection with it. When it was a really terrible... I mean, this was a little bit before your time, really, the 70s. And early 80s.
This sounds like an apology for a racist act.
Well, no, but it wasn't. We were racist. We were racist, but only because we didn't understand...
It's good defence.
...what any of the stuff was. We had no one around to be racist. We were racist in a kind of imaginary way, because we had no one there. In Loughborough, where I lived between the ages of 4 and 8... That was a multicultural school I went to. My best friend was called Satish Patel. That's a hard man to find on Facebook. And he was my best friend. So, you know, then I moved to Somerset and there was no Asian black people around. So it was... Yeah. We just didn't understand we didn't know what it was, you know. But, like, all you'd watch TV and the comedians was on and it was, you know...
You laugh at... You know,
well,
Jim Davidson.
A, you'd laugh at jokes that weren't any good, regardless of the racism. And B, there was just, you know, black guys on there going, oh, watch out, I'll move next door to you, and all that sort of stuff. So it permeated the culture in a horrific way. I mean, I don't know if things are better or worse now. It's hard to...
Oh, much better. Actually, the person I think about in relation to this subject is probably Lenny Henry, you know, from Dudley. And his career just shows you how far we've gone. I mean, when he started... I think he was doing whiteface.
Well, he did. He was in the Black and White Minstrels. Yeah, so he wasn't. He was, but he was the only black guy in the Black and White Minstrels ever. The Black and White Minstrels was a TV show for the younger people who perhaps won't believe this could be a thing, where they'd sang songs, the men all blacked up, and the women were white. I think the women.
It's
would,
amazing to be doing that in the '70s, yeah. And then he went on, had a great career, and now, you know, what I mean, it's insane.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, those things have moved on. Are we heading backwards in a lot of ways?
I don't think so. I just think all it is, Twitter and social networking is just exposing how bad things always were. You know, we now, those people, we have now got a voice and we can see them, whereas before they were just locked away in weird pubs in Bilston.
And is it about, I mean, I sort of think a lot of this thing, I mean, a lot of discussions come down to who's right and who's wrong and shouting people down. There's no real discussion about any issue, really, at the moment. You know, so there's a lot of controversial subjects. And people, if you say the wrong thing, you get shouted down. And it isn't the problem that you actually have to convince people that you're correct. It's not enough just to say, you're not allowed to be racist. Okay, we're not allowed to be racist. And that's basically what's happened with social media is, oh, you're not allowed to do any of these things anymore, but I still think it. It's actually changing people's hearts and minds rather than telling them off. Really.
Yeah, it's not a very sophisticated environment, is it, social networking? But I think social networking has changed politics permanently. And we don't know how. I mean, Trump, Brexit, all of it because of Facebook and Twitter and so on. And we don't understand it. It's crazy, and yet we're part of it. I mean, you were an early adopter. Basically, it's your fault.
It is. Well, you know, it's interesting. Well, John Ronson's coming on in this series. We've got lots of great guests coming up. And he's doing a lot of stuff about the effects of... he's got a brilliant podcast about the effects of... just the guy who realised that you could give porn away for free and make money doing adverts, and how it's called The Butterfly Effect, his podcast. Do listen to it. And all the effects that have had. But actually, you know, most revolutions, even the Industrial Revolution, was quite a slow-moving thing. And in, you know, in our lifetime, like two or three music formats have become redundant, haven't they?
So course,
I've worked through, I've given away all my CDs to a charity shop. CDs were, you know, I'd already had two different formats before CDs come out, and CDs are already now redundant.
I wish the Conservative Party would become redundant.
but I think so much is changing, and the internet is changing so much that's what's going to be interesting in the next decade. I think politically, you know, what's happening is awful, really, is that exact thing of people being able to manipulate data. Is that, if you're being able to manipulate data and understand how data works, is going to make someone the king of the world, and maybe it's going to be the wrong person. I mean, they might be there already, let's face it, through that. So all that stuff is interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk to John about that a bit more.
Yeah, he probably knows more about it.
He probably will know more.
But I mean, Twitter is we both probably have mixed feelings about Twitter. It's definitely made my life brilliant in many ways. I've made real friends who've changed my life. I gave away someone at her wedding not long ago who I met on Twitter.
Right.
An incredible thing. He's one of my best friends now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's fucking awful. And, you know, the abuse, the racism, the misogyny, shite.
Yeah. It's been interesting to see that journey happening. I mean, in a horrible way. It used to be, you know, Twitter was nice for a little while.
Yeah.
And then someone will come and say something awful, and you go, hey, well, look at this guy. But that's the problem. The retweet of the awful thing is actually the thing that fuels the awful thing. And that's and not to say you shouldn't stand up to awful things, but by doing that, you can't, that's what Trump is. You can't beat him, because every time you criticize him, you're just throwing more logs onto his awful lot of fire that manifests itself in the thing on his head.
Yeah, basically.
He's basically a flaming orange burning man that you're making burn more. Yeah, interesting. That's an interesting thought. It's terrifying. And yeah, I don't think we're going to keep... things are happening that are... Everyone's saying, oh, it'll be all right. That's the problem with Britain, is our lives have been all right. Everyone in this room and everyone under 80, our lives have been all right. And so you just think, oh, I'll be all right. They'll work it out. That's what that Brexit... Oh, they'll work it out.
Yeah.
They might not make... Oh, it might go really badly wrong. People might die. No, that won't happen.
The thing is, outside England and in the US, it's even worse. In places like India, there are mobs like coming to creation because of messages on WhatsApp. You know, it's mob culture and because of social networking. So people are dying already because of this.
Of course, yeah. Terrible, isn't it? Not because of this podcast, though. I think maybe some, because like people keep tweeting me and saying, oh, that thing was so funny, that one was so funny. I was driving the car to pull over and I didn't crash. Some people must just laugh, find it so funny they crash and die, right? And you never find out about those ones because they're dead. And the fireman has to go, hold on, what was he listening to? I'll email Rich Sherry and let him know he killed one.
That'd be a good blurb for you next book.
I hope I have killed a few.
literally died laughing.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope that's happened. I hope it happens at that point. Someone's laughing at home so much at that they fall into the waste disposal unit. I mean, that's quite a specific hope. Look, we're going to have to... I've got to go home through the snow of...
Snowmageddon.
The snow down south. I'm going to listen to my own podcast and I'm going to die laughing on the icy roads of Hertfordshire. And please put the podcast out if I do die, Ben. It will be great. It's been really lovely. There's so much to talk about. You are going to be signing and selling copies of your book out in the foyer. I'll be signing copies of a lot. I've got this. That's my memoir of How Not to Grow Up. That's for sale. That's from Tepat. That's when I was 40.
Wow.
Your age. I was a kid alt, like you mentioned you were. And my book's Emergency Questions. There's some badges if you want to help the podcast. There's some of my DVDs. I'll be at the back there. I can take credit cards now. Do you have those in Wolverhampton yet? I guess they can't really take the risk with you, can they? Debit cards are fine as well. So that was it. That was the point where I went too far.
Yeah.
And now I've got to hightail out of town. I'm never coming back to Bilston. I'm making you that as a promise. But I'll see you in the Slade rooms for my next stand-up. Come on, Slade. You can't get better than that. It's really been fantastic to meet you. Thank you so much for coming along.
Thank you for having me.
Do buy this book at home, Boy with the Top Knot. And you've got another book called Marriage Matters.
Material.
Fuck it.
Almost there.
Marriage Material. Well, you're not married, so what do you know about it? Read my book. Read my blog. You'll find out about it. It's wonderful. Do get married. And I love Wolverhampton. I love you. I love you. I love you, Wolverhampton. Don't tell anyone I love you. It'll ruin everything. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for Wolverhampton boy, Satnam Sangare! You have been listening to Richard Herring's lovely super terrific podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest Satnam Sangare. We have been at Bilston Town Hall. Thank you to everybody here for having us. I'd like to thank Pest for the continued use of their beautiful music. I am indebted to my producer, Ben Walker, who's come all the way, he's driven me to Wolverhampton. That's how committed he is. Thank you also to Orange Mark at the British Comedy Guide for all the many years of hosting us. I'm very, very grateful to you, Mark. Thank you for that. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Hey, if you've enjoyed this podcast, please come and see us in 2019. Head to richterring.com/gigs and you can see where I'm coming. There's loads of dates to be announced. Also, I forgot to mention I'm at King's Place on the 10th and 17th of June. That is in London in King's Cross. And there's some very exciting possible guests for that one. So book ahead. Thanks for everyone who has booked ahead. And we will see you very soon, wherever you may be. Dance, dance, wherever you may be.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can. And make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.